Well, thank you very much for joining me. This is the Money Man Report on the Biz Radio Network, the official radio network of capitalism. We are Radio Wall Street. My guest, my co-host is Dr. Arthur Laffer, as you know, and he has invited Cameron Haidt to be on with us. And, welcome to the program, Cameron.
Thanks, Dan, and thanks for having me on. And Dr. Laffer, always good to catch up with you.
Well, how are you, Cameron? It's always a pleasure. I want you to know, Daniel, that I'm on Cameron's board, and I'm involved with his company, which is a very exciting company that he's doing, and he's got a great background. He should explain it maybe a little bit to us.
Well, we're going to give him a chance to do that, and but I just wanted to tell you a little anecdote, because when I found out that you were going to be on, and my producer sent me some written material, Cameron, that you had written. And then, about an hour later, I had an opportunity to make several hundred thousand dollars for a very quick one-minute dialogue. All I had to do was sound smart, and I took it right out of your article.
You're kidding.
Yes, I told him
the... Are you going to
split the profit
with me?
Absolutely. what I told him was, I'm going to... how am I going to make decisions? Well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take these assets, and I'm going to figure out how risky I think they are, and which one is the best one, and grade them on how timely they are for the economy and all these things, and then I'm going to put more money in the ones that are higher score and less money in the ones that are lower score, and thereby substitute discipline for randomness.
That's exactly what Cameron does. Yeah.
I understand. And unfortunately for all of us, including my mother, who would be disappointed that I didn't give him the slightest bit of credit for it in that discussion. But I do it here in front of hundreds of thousands of people and God. So here we are.
Yeah, you know what's amazing is that, if you take a step back and say that, fundamental investors are trying to make money by building a portfolio of mispriced assets, and sort of to maximize potential return, your portfolio has to have the highest risk-reward ideas as the largest investments, and the lowest risk-reward should be the smallest. And, what we found is that 90%+ of investors don't even have their five best risk-reward ideas as their five largest positions. And if you sort of just think about that in aggregate, you assume that each mid-sized position costs your fund about 0.5% of potential return. We estimate that the average portfolio is destroying between 2 and 10% of potential performance from poor position sizing.
Let's think about we got a lot of people listening to us. They have their personal portfolios, and of course there are lots of money managers and people like that listen to us as well. But the thing is that one of the concepts that people completely forget about when they get 20 years of prosperity, I'll give you an example. We noticed about 2 years ago that U.S. government bonds were paying about the same interest as Russian bonds. Russian bonds, the ones from that country that defaulted on its debt less than 10 years ago or 12 years ago, and they were treated exactly as U.S. government bonds, which tells me that there's absolutely no risk to anything in anybody's mind. And so what we did is we went out and sold high-yield bonds short instantly, because it couldn't get any worse than thinking that the United States and Russia are equal. Yeah, it couldn't get any stupider than that. And so we went out and sold high-yield bonds short, and obviously it turned out that things were riskier than people expected. But the reason I tell this story is because the whole concept of risk-adjusted, you said it as though this is something that's on all of our minds, but I don't believe that most of the people listening to us are thinking about that at all. They're just thinking about what makes the most money. They forgot about the fact that a lot of these things, they're going to lose, the 90% chance they're going to lose it all sooner or later. And so would you discuss, please, first, the concept of risk-adjusted returns before we go on to even take it to the next level?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, what ends up happening is people get fixated on the thesis of their investment, and they do that to the exclusion of all other information. And so, you know, what we have determined, and, you know, my background is I worked for some investment banks for a while, DLJ and Lehman Brothers, and then I worked for a hedge fund. And, you know, what you're trying to do is create a framework for every name, every investment that you make, so that you evaluate all the potential outcomes that could occur. And it's relatively simple to start thinking in terms of risk-adjusted return. All you need to do is sit down and say, okay, I have a thesis. Well, what's my potential profit associated with that thesis? And then you have to force yourself to think about how much could I potentially lose if my thesis is wrong.
So let's give your example that you give in this article here. You know about this company. You've been in and out of them before. You know the company. You know the whole thing. And you know they're going to make more money than anybody projected that they would. And so, Cameron, you're the analyst who's working with this guy. And you say, well, how much is the stock going to go up if they come in ahead of what people expect? And the money manager says, well, that could go up 10% right away.
Yeah.
And then you say, well, how confident are you that they're going to do that? And he says, well, I'm 90% sure that they're going to be way better than anybody thought, that they're going to make 10% right away, and I'm 90% sure they're going to do that. And then Cameron says, well, what's going to happen if they actually are making less money, and not only that, but all the people that understand this get surprised to the downside, and what's going to happen to that guy? And so the guy says, what? The stock would go down.
He says, well, you know, everybody knows they're going to beat, so if they actually miss, you know, the stock would be down at least, you know, 20%. And, you know, they said it was a 90% chance they beat. That means there's a 10% chance they miss. If you combine all that together, it's very simple math, and we put it on our website, alphatheory.com/calculator, a quick calculator that shows you how to calculate risk-adjusted return. The math on that says it's a 7% risk-adjusted return, which is effectively pretty minuscule, and probably doesn't equate to being a large position in your portfolio. But when you spell out the thesis as simply, I'm very confident that this company is going to beat earnings, hey, it sounds great. But when you actually force yourself to think about how much could I make versus how much could I lose and the probability of each occurring, you do a better job of making portfolio decisions.
Now, the thing is, this is very good philosophically, and I want to get more into this because of what the take-home for people is going to be, that they how do they get to be a better investor. But this Alpha Theory, is this a piece of your business, is this a piece of software or a book or a course, or what exactly is it?
It's a software and consulting service. We do both for our clients. You know, it's a software that we created that was the genesis was out of the hedge fund that I used to work for. We subsequently made it a commercial product, and then, you know, it's also a consulting service. We can walk into a client, we'll walk through their portfolio, sort of help them to do what their potential upsides, downsides are for the investments in their portfolio, the probabilities of those occurring, and sort of show them the portfolio they have versus the portfolio their research suggests they should have.
And that would mean that you would say, gee, this one here is a lousy risk-adjusted return, and this one is a better one. And so you ought to probably have twice as much of this one in your portfolio as this one.
That's exactly right. You know, I find that when we go in and do these type of analyses, what we end up finding is probably the most common thing that happens is what I call the good stock paradox. And this happens for not only hedge funds and mutual funds, this happens for investment advisors and retail investors as well. You know, let's say you have a $20 stock and you believe that it, you know, has an upside of 40 and a downside of 10. You know, let's say it's a 2% position in your portfolio. Well, when that stock goes from 20 to 40, what's happened to your position size? Well, that position size has doubled. That 2% position is now a 4% position. Well, how much upside do you have left? Assuming fundamentals haven't changed, you have no upside left and a ton of downside. Well, what ends up happening in a lot of portfolios is as their risk-adjusted return is falling, which is that asset going up in value, they're increasing their exposure to weaker risk-adjusted return assets. And what we end up finding is a lot of portfolios have very high concentration to very weak risk-adjusted return assets simply because those are the names in their portfolio that ended up working.
And this is really what makes me, this is what I find so interesting about this.
It is pretty interesting, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because if you look at all the people that are listening to us right now who are not happy with what has happened to them, to their money and their savings and their investments recently, this is the disease they caught. Because what happened was some insurance agent taught them that they have to hold on to stuff forever. And they didn't make this adjustment that you're talking about, and they ended up with a whole bunch of risky stuff with little upside but a lot of downside, and then the inevitable happened. Sooner or later, it's going to happen. Cameron Height, Dr. Arthur Laffer, we're going to take a break, sell something, and be back here on the Money Man Report. This is the Money Man Report. I'm Dan Fishberg. I want to remind you folks of a couple of things. If you want to read about the points that were distributed by the Treasury Secretary in this non-plan, this set of goals and wish list that he made in the form of a plan, you can find that on bizradio.com. And if you want information on the bond course, which you better take because people don't know anything about these things, and that's pretty much going to be the game for you. So if you want to know about any of those things, go to bizradio.com. Now, my guests, of course, are Dr. Arthur Laffer, who is the co-host, and I've got to do this very quickly. It is Cameron Height, whose company is Alpha Theory. That's what I couldn't remember, Alpha Theory. And look, there's a study which roughly goes that a guy goes in to bring bananas into a monkey that is part of the test. And he comes in half the time with two bananas and half the time with one banana. And I don't know how it happened, but somehow the monkey expected to get two bananas, and so he came in half the time with one banana. Another guy comes in with one banana and shows it to the monkey, and every once in a while, half the time, he pulls out a second banana, and he surprises the monkey with two. The guy who surprised the monkey with one, that is, he brought in two but only gave the monkey one half the time, that guy the monkey hates. And the guy that the monkey loves is the guy that comes in with one, and to half the time he gets two. In both cases, the monkey gets the equal number of bananas, but he hates to be disappointed way more than he is excited about being surprised. And this is a story that I've been thinking about for many years, because I studied a guy named Kahneman years and years ago and his psychological work. And this is what you do. You've done a lot of work on this, too. Cameron Height.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly, I mean, what you're describing is behavioral finance and neuroeconomics, I mean, in a nutshell. I mean, and, you know, there's research going back 30 years explaining that the human brain is not well designed to make financial decisions, but we still use it exclusively to make financial decisions. And what Alpha Theory does, and you describe it well, is take those financial decisions and helps you appreciate why you're making them. So, at the end of the day, we put a step in between you pulling the trigger on buying an asset and actually enacting that trade. So we make you appreciate why you're making that decision to help get around a lot of those heuristic-based and mental calculation-based errors that occur.
Heuristic, folks, means that your brain goes through these simplification tricks in order to let you manage a very complicated environment. And those simplification tricks can be good for reproductive decisions and good about figuring out what to eat, but they lose you money on Wall Street a lot.
That's exactly right. And I mean, especially when you're thinking in terms and context of a portfolio. You know, you have one asset, and it's just one asset, but as soon as you have two assets, the portfolio, and you have to think in the context and make decisions in context of that entire portfolio. And, you know, it becomes overly complicated to do through mental calculations. So all Alpha Theory really does is give you a framework to take all of your investments and describe them in potential upside profit, potential downside loss, and the probability of each, which gives you a measure of risk-adjusted return and gives you a way to translate that risk-adjusted return into a position size, which gives you a portfolio where your best ideas are constantly your largest positions, all the way down to your weakest being your smallest, or they're just culled out.
And you see, folks, if you look, if you're a billionaire, I suppose that availing yourself of these services are good. But also, even if you have $20,000, these principles are going to help you. And that's why we're doing this. Let me shift gears a little bit, Dr. Laffer and Cameron Height. How does a guy like Cameron Height, who comes up with an idea like this, get a guy like Dr. Laffer on his board, and how does he take this thing to market? A lot of people have ideas. How does one make it to the mainstream, to the big time with something like this?
Well, I can tell you why. When Cameron came to me, I thought the idea was great, and I was hoping I'd be asked to be on the board or do something with the company. So now, Cameron, it's your job. Why on earth would you take an old, boring economist and talk to him?
Yeah. Well, I think that, what ended up happening is the first time that Dr. Laffer and I met, there was a conference room of probably 10 people, and it could have been like the other 8 people were not in the room because we were so enraptured in conversation. And by the end of that, I just said to myself, this is the kind of person that I want to be involved with. And so it just sort of all came from that, that initial meeting and subsequent meetings, which have proven that Dr. Laffer has been just an amazing
Is this service that you do, is this something regular people can subscribe to? Is it or is it really for people with a few $100 million, or what is it?
No, it runs the gamut. I mean, it's something that regular people could subscribe to. The only difference is that, some of the complexities that a institutional money manager may need, liquidity constraints and sector exposure constraints and real-time pricing and global assets. Some of those things aren't included, but they may not be necessary for the retail investor. And if there's something that they really want to see, that's something they can get. But the tenets of Alpha Theory are still there to help them dramatically improve returns in the portfolio.
In the last couple of seconds, you got some talk about exchange-traded funds. And tell me a few things that people don't know about exchange-traded funds and how to use them, to use them.
Yeah, I think that's probably more what it is. I think it's, how not to use them. And I think that one of the things that people generally overlook is the fact that adding an asset to your portfolio, and this is generally on the short side that I see a lot of ETFs being added to the portfolio, is that adding an asset to the portfolio increases your overall gross exposure or your leverage. And, what a lot of people end up doing is they end up taking an asset class, let's say they're long financials, or in this situation, potentially short financials. And what they'll do is they'll counteract that with an ETF that is representative of that financial exposure, where the whole point is to put that ETF on so that it decreases the overall risk of that portfolio. But they're actually increasing the risk because they're increasing their gross exposure, when they probably would have been better off just decreasing the initial investment they made in the financial sector instead of trying to put the ETF hedge on, and because that hedge inherently costs them money.
I'm not sure. Try to say that a different way, would you please?
So let's think about it in terms of risk-adjusted return. So let's say that we have, we're long Bank of America and long Goldman Sachs, and we want to put on a financial ETF short to counteract the fact that we have financial exposure on the long side.
Right.
And so what ends up happening is if we're long bias for Bank of America and Goldman Sachs, then we probably have a long bias on financials in general, which means that ETF that we're shorting probably has a positive risk-adjusted return but we're putting it on as a short, which means that it decreases our overall portfolio risk-adjusted return. When you're better off, instead of putting on that positive risk-adjusted return as a short, you're better off just decreasing your exposure to Bank of America and Goldman Sachs by a commensurate expense on the amount of risk, on the amount of...
I got it this time, Daniel. You were right. That way. I didn't get it the first time, but this time I do. By putting on a short on those financials, what you're doing is shorting your best bet, and it makes no sense whatsoever. What you should do just basically is in the stocks themselves and short the things you don't think are going to do well.
Yeah,
well, and not only that, but you might not even correlate or do what it's supposed to. You know, I could go on with this forever, but we are completely out of time. Dr. Lapper, thank you for being
with us. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you.
With us,
Cameron.
And Cameron Height, thank you very much for being with us. And that is all the time I've got. Stay tuned for Wall Street Live. Don't forget, go to bizradio.com where you can find out about the bond course and about Geithner. And the name of the company is, one more time, alphatheory.com. We'll be right, I won't be right back, but Wall Street Live will. Have a wonderful day.